Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And we're getting closer and closer to the Oscars, so that means more Best Picture nominees to discuss. We've got two left. We're going to do one of them today. That is Triangle of Sadness, directed by Ruben Östlund, a Swedish director. We've got a lot of thoughts on this one, so we will share that with you coming up in just a few minutes as we do another Best Picture nominee. So we do have some news items, though. First, the SAG Awards happened, and those were very fun. Lots of big winners at the SAG Awards. And
if you
don't know, the SAG Awards are a good indicator for the Oscars. One of the better ones, for sure.
Usually.
In terms of, yeah. Yep.
Usually.
But this year's SAG Awards was wild. So,
wild. It's crazy, everyone. It's anyone's game at this point.
Lots of random stuff happened. So Michelle Yao became the first Asian woman to win the Best Female Actor SAG Award. So congratulations to her. Ki-Hoo Kwan became the first Asian man to win an individual film acting award. So congrats to him. He had a great speech, I thought, too. Really
he did. I've watched several speeches multiple times. I have a problem. I don't know.
Brendan Fraser won, which makes sense. Jamie Lee Curtis also won. That's kind of a surprise there. Supporting actress. So
you know what? I felt like the SAG Awards were literally what I want to win. Like I was, I was even thrilled for Everything Everywhere All at Once winning everything. Cause I just thought, out of what I've seen this year. Yes. Also I really have changed my tune a little bit about that movie. The things I didn't like before, I still don't like. But when I look at overall how it made me feel, what I remember from watching it that first time and the acting performances, I am totally okay if it wins. In fact, I would be probably pretty elated if it wins Best Picture. But everyone, Jared pointed out Brendan Fraser won. I want him to get the Oscar, but don't discount Austin Butler, because if anyone's going to steal it, it's going to be Austin Butler. Mark my words.
Yeah, and Austin, I think, has a good chance as well. He's won a couple other things.
So I found a fun fact this weekend.
Yes.
On accident. I couldn't remember who the youngest male was to ever win. It's Adrian Brody for The Pianist.
Okay.
He was 29, so Austin's older than that. But that's only happened one time. And for 29 to be the youngest male to ever win, that should tell you something. They really don't like to give it to young, attractive men. I wouldn't be like irate if Austin gets it, but I think based on this, Austin's going to have other options. Brendan is the comeback kid, and I want him to win.
That makes sense. So I think I would want Brendan to win as well. So we'll
see what
happens.
Jamie Lee Curtis, I was thrilled. That was so exciting.
And as Katie said, Everything Everywhere All at Once won Best Cast in a Motion Picture. So that's the big award at the SAG Awards. So congrats to them for winning that. And then you pointed out lots of fashion icks, but you were going to save thoughts for the Oscars. I saw a few and some did not look good. So
there were a couple. You know, the color that stood out to me that looked glorious was yellow. Viola Davis and Angela Bassett were both wearing yellow. They looked stunning. And then everyone was talking about Zendaya. Zendaya slayed. She slays all day. I don't think Zendaya has ever had a bad fashion moment, to be quite honest with you. She looked fantastic. Yellow, I think also yellow looks gorgeous on like the complexion of like Viola Davis and stuff, because she has that gorgeous, gorgeous brown skin. And it's just really good, that bright yellow. I could never pull off bright yellow. So God bless the people who can. But most of the outfits were appalling. So I was like, yep, I'm just going to say for the most part, terrible. And the fashion police, aka me, will be watching during the Oscars. And I will report that to you all on our podcast episode.
Do you have any predictions for the Oscars in terms of fashion, like a color or a style that you think is going to be big?
So I think pink's going to be big because it's already been big. There's been a lot of fuchsia, hot pink. Also, everyone, we're recording this on March 2nd. So I always like to timestamp it, you know? So if something happens, I can say this is what I, you know. So I definitely think we're going to see pink. Really, if we're going by the SAGs, I think we could also see some yellow.
Okay.
And then if anybody is a fan of the Oscars or has listened to our Oscar podcast before, white is typically the color a lot of women wear because more, I think it's more women have won while wearing white than any other color, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. That's another shade that doesn't look great on me. But anyway.
But yeah, it's a good, I guess it's a good luck charm at the Oscars. Yeah. So
let's go with pink and yellow.
Okay. Very spring colors for the Oscars.
Right? So. Let's just manifest
but it is
it.
Late this year. You know, it's middle of March, so it makes sense. So other news items is the new season of Succession will premiere later this month. And there was some rumors out there that it might be the final season of Succession. And they confirmed that earlier today. They released a trailer and also a poster that said it was going to be the final season. Yeah. So the last season of Succession will premiere later this month on HBO. I really like Succession. It's one of my favorite shows, if not my favorite show on TV. And I'm a little sad that they're only going to do four seasons. But if they do all four seasons and they were all good, then and they don't have any more story to tell, then, you know, don't extend it out anymore. That's my thought.
Well, so. And I think it's the same with Ted Lasso. I mean, if you've got a good thing and you're riding high, like, it's a good time to get out while the getting's good, I guess. I don't know a better way to say that, but yeah, Succession is one of my
favorite
shows. It's
a very Ted Lasso way to say it, so.
Yeah. I did just add, you know, I have my watch list I've talked about on here, my little Excel spreadsheet, and I just added Succession. I was like, oh yeah, that's coming up. And then also, okay, sidebar, since we're talking about shows coming back, if anybody watched the show Sex Life on Netflix, please send me a message. It was real inappropriate. Like when I say, when I say I'm shocked, straight up shooketh to my core that they can put that on Netflix, that is the show that does that. And I saw a trailer and the two stars were talking about it and they're like, oh, this season's much racier. And I was like, how much racier can it get? I don't understand. So if anyone's into that show, it's finally back. I will watch it, but I am currently, I guess I can talk about my, should I just do my recommendations?
Yeah, we can just go into recommendations.
Might as well. So. Then I'll go back to my correction. But my recommendations, I'm currently in the middle of Married at First Sight season 12. It's on Netflix. Every once in a while, Netflix will bring like one of the more recent seasons, or usually it's three of them, of Married at First Sight. So I'm watching season 12. I have so many thoughts. I will say on this season 12, I don't think I personally would have wanted to marry any of the men. I think, not like they can't be nice, and I'm not judging on looks. I'm just saying, like, all of them, there's an ick for all of them for me that I can't get past. A couple of them I just outright loathe, but it is an interesting season to watch for sure. And then I finished Perfect Match, Jared. I know you're, like, at the beginning, but here's what I will tell you. I was thrilled, just like the SAG Awards, I was thrilled with who won. Like, by the end, I was, and I never, I feel like the people I want to win never win. And I loved it. I was very happy with the ending. So, yeah, if you all have not started watching Perfect Match, please get on it.
Yeah, we're about a quarter of the way through right now.
Okay.
So, good. We just saw the big blow up between two of the ladies. I won't spoil who it is, but that happens at the end of episode 3. So,
well, It's great. It's worth a watch. And then the only other thing, I read a really sweet book I wanted to talk about because it's different than a lot of other kind of mainstream romantic comedy, kind of that kind of genre out there. It's called Lunar Love, and it's by Lauren Kung Jessen. And she is actually biracial. She's mixed race, and she has Asian, and I think it might be Scottish. I know she married a Scottish man, but she has a very interesting cultural background. And so she wanted to write a book with characters like that, and she did. And we read it. My best friend Kylie and I always do like a buddy read. It's a book club that we do on Instagram each month, and that was the book that we picked. It was perfect for February because it was like Valentine's kind of themed. But it was also about the Chinese zodiac signs, so they are different than Western zodiac that we're used to. And it was darling, and there was a lot about family in there, the importance of family. There was a side storyline about grandparents that just melted my heart. But it was a really sweet, like, romantic book, but it was neat to have all of the, like, these Asian cultural elements to them. So if you're looking for a fun book, that was a book of the month pick. Again, it's called, I know, shout out book of the month. I did decide, Jared, I'm trying in March to read only my book of the month picks because I have so many. Yeah, I have like 14, and it really bothers me that I have 14 just sitting there. So I was like, I'm going to try to read as many as humanly possible in March to get that backlog down. So I'll keep you all posted, as I always do, about my reading journey.
I only have one recommend this week. It's also on Netflix. It is a show called Full Swing. It's about golf. Oh. Now, I'll preface this by saying I don't know a ton about golf. I mean, I know how to play. I know the rules. I know some of the big names. But I would say if you're a hardcore golf fan, this is not the show for you. This is definitely more for the casual golf fan. They just follow different golfers. Each episode is kind of on a different golfer or two. So the first episode was like about Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, who were childhood friends, but they still have this like rivalry going between them. Another episode was about a golfer who's like on their way up and another one who's on their way down. So that was kind of interesting. One was about a guy who didn't think he was very good, but he's better than, you know, he thought he was. So just kind of every episode is a unique kind of take on golf, and it doesn't get super duper serious or anything. So if you're, you know, like I said, and it's recapping like what happened last year. So if you already know, if you're a golf fan and you already know who won some of these tournaments, it's probably not going to be as exciting to you, but like,
right.
I don't. So I kind of just go in with like, oh, who's going to win this one? So, but I like it so far. I'm about halfway through it. Again, it's Full Swing on Netflix, and each episode is only like 40 minutes too. So you can cruise through them pretty fast. So,
well, I like that, Jared, because we're both bringing different perspectives here. You've got golf. I'm talking about a show called Sex Life and the Chinese Zodiac. So, you know, we're just bringing different things here. Good for us. But I do. So many people like golf that I could see how that would appeal to a wide variety of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I would say it's probably okay to watch with your kids if you want to. There is some cussing and stuff, but other than that, it's not too bad. I don't know how interested your kids would be in it. Depends on if they're interested in golf or not. But you know, it's definitely for, like I said, the casual golf fan. And I like when Netflix does sports shows. They seem to do more of those than other streaming services. So they've got this. They've got the F1 show, Drive to Survive, which I haven't watched, but I know a lot of people like that one. They had the Michael Jordan documentary on there back when that was out. So, yeah, they've got some sports options for you.
The Drive to Survive one popped up on mine, and I was like, in what world, what history, what in my history made you think that this is my thing? No.
Yeah, sometimes it'll be like 93% match, and you're like, right. I don't think so.
No, it's definitely not. and then I guess the other thing, I have not a correction, but I did want to share with you all some information following up from a previous episode when, gosh, what was it, Jared? BAFTAs. We were talking about the BAFTAs. And I said that Kerry Condon won for Banshees of Inisherin, but the interpreter, it was announced that Carey Mulligan had won. So I found out how that happened, and it made me feel so sad. But also, if all of you were like, I didn't see that happen, I also figured out why we never saw it happen. So Troy Kotsur, who again, Jared and I adore, he won an Oscar. Was that just last year? It was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Best
that made me cry.
Actor.
I remember crying. Yeah. So he is a person who is deaf. He was signing for the award, but the interpreter signed the wrong name, which, to be fair, if you think you see the name Kerry and you know Kerry Mulligan, or,
The other difficult thing is there's two people with the same name in the same category.
Exactly.
So
and they're spelled
hard.
Differently and they're from different places, but they're both beautiful women from European areas, whatever. But super awkward. But the reason we didn't see it on the BAFTAs, well, I wasn't watching live. And B, the show was aired on BBC, but it had a time delay, as a lot of award shows do. So it was edited out of the broadcast. So I had heard that that had happened, but didn't see it. But that's the true story. So
Okay. Totally
understandable. Mistakes happen. Worse things have happened. I'm sure worse things will happen. At least nobody was physically assaulted. So that's something.
Hey, on the up and up. So, okay, we'll go ahead and talk now about Triangle of Sadness. Speaking of awards, this movie is nominated for 3 Academy Awards, Best Original Screenplay, Best Picture, and Best Director for Ruben Östlund. This was released in October 7th of 2022, streaming on November 22nd. It's interesting because normally the Oscar movies come out later in the year. This came out in the fall, but it was early in the fall, so it still held steam throughout the Academy race and got nominated for Best Picture. So
somehow.
That's why we're talking about it today. It's rated R for some sexual content and some language. I would also say it's rated R.
We're going to have to talk about that rating.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's rated R for some other things as well. If you don't like vomit, puke,
bodily fluids of any kind,
do not watch this.
If seeing
someone puke makes you puke, don't watch this movie.
If you want to see someone defecate, this is the film for you, because they've got it all. So many thoughts. But I was shocked when I saw the rating, not because it's R, but because they only listed those two things. And I was like, ooh, this is R for a lot more reasons than that. But okay.
Yeah, there was some language, but there wasn't that much language in the movie or sexual content. So it's interesting that those were the reasons it got the R rating.
Insane.
It's 2 hours and 27 minutes or 2 hours and 29 minutes, depending on what you look at. So somebody was, you know, a little sleepy when they started the stopwatch for the movie. So it went 2 minutes longer there. IMDb score is a 7.4 out of 10. And then Rotten Tomatoes critics is 72%. Audience is 70%. So pretty close in terms of critics and audience. That's surprising to me. Also, critics at 72% critics score is normally not going to be good enough to win you Best Picture. You're going to need something in the 80s, 90s.
This makes no sense.
You're going to need to be pretty high up there to get a pretty good chance at Best Picture on Rotten Tomatoes for the critics score. So that's a good indicator, too. If there's something below 80 on Rotten Tomatoes and it's nominated for Best Picture and it's got a low, you know, a below 80 critics score, it's probably doesn't have a great shot. So because the critics are, you know, they don't vote on the Academy Awards, but they obviously, some of them do, but they go to things and they go to these parties and screenings and, you know, they're definitely involved in it. So box office wise, this made $4.5 million domestically, worldwide $23.9 million. So definitely doing better overseas. It makes sense. Ruben is Swedish, the director of this film. So doing better over there. And this is a synopsis for this one. Pretty simple synopsis. A fashion model celebrity couple joins an eventful cruise for the super rich. And that is what happens. So this is directed by Ruben Östlund, a Swedish director who is known for The Square and Force Majeure. The Square, you may remember, is the movie poster where the guy has his shirt off and is like standing on a table. That one had a very weird trailer. Elizabeth Moss was in that. I never saw it, but I just remember that trailer distinctly because it was so different from anything else. That came out about 5 years ago.
Well, Jared, you pronounced Force Majeure beautifully. Thank you. I was like, oh, wow.
I have also not seen Force Majeure, the movie. No. So, and he has won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival three times. That is impressive that he's won that. That's the Best Picture award at the
also were those other
Cannes
movies
or
like
Cannes
this
International
one?
Film Festival. Yeah.
If the other movies were like this one, people must be like doing shrooms or something before go. I don't understand. Maybe it's because
they do be giving those 16-minute standing ovations.
Maybe it's because I'm not European. I mean, I want to be, and I do think some things about me are, you know, more like that life, but I don't get it. I even wondered if the fact that this film was European had to do with the rating. Like, I wondered if, don't know.
Yep.
I don't know. Because maybe they're just not offended by that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. So he has no upcoming projects right now. We'll see what he works on next. He usually has 5 or 6 years between movies. So it's probably going to be a while for another one. And we'll take a break here on the show. We'll come back. We'll talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for Triangle of Sadness. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Triangle of Sadness, nominated for Best Picture. This movie does have a pretty large cast, although none of them are in the movie for a super long time, except for the two main characters, Yaya and Carl. We're going to start with Carl, played by Harris Dickinson.
Yeah, and I'll just blow through these because this movie was not my favorite. Harris Dickinson, plays Carl. He's an English actor, writer, and director known for Beach Rats, County Lines, and Where the Crawdads Sing. For all of you who did see that movie, I did not. I just read the book. He has three upcoming projects, including Retreat, Blitz, and The Iron Claw. Then, secondly, we have Charles B. Dean. She plays Yaya. This is very sad, and I'm just shocked that this happened. So, anyway, Charlby Dean was originally from Cape Town, South Africa. She was known for Spud, Don't Sleep, and Black Lightning. She actually died in August. And the whole reason is fascinating and so scary. Over 10 years ago, she had her spleen removed, which people can live without their spleens, but you're more susceptible to illnesses. But this year, well, last year, in August, she got bacterial sepsis. So that's when, you know, your organs are shutting down because of the absence of the spleen. And the reason she got that was she had an infection, and the infection was caused by either an animal bite or a lick. I couldn't pronounce the infection, so I wasn't even going to attempt it, but you can look this all up. It's just kind of like one of those extremely, it's a series of extremely unfortunate events. She was only 32 years old, and I felt really bad because I absolutely detested this movie. I barely have one nice thing to say about it, but I felt really bad. I was looking things up and saw that she had died, and she's not bad in this movie at all. I just think I hate everything else about it, but she seemed like a lovely person. It's just very sad that she died. So anyway, that was Charlby Dean. And then lastly, we have Woody Harrelson. He plays the captain. That's literally the character's name. Woody, of course, we know he's the person we do know from the cast. He is originally from Texas, but he was raised in Ohio. I thought that was interesting because I live in Ohio. He is best known for True Detective, Zombieland, Natural Born Killers, and The People versus Larry Flint. He's been nominated for 3 acting Oscars for The People versus Larry Flint, The Messenger, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I was kind of shocked by that. I just didn't realize he'd been nominated that many times. He has 7 upcoming projects, some of which include Project Artemis, which I'm sure a lot of people are excited about. That's based on a book, Girl from the North Country, and The Most Dangerous Man in America.
Nice. When you were talking about Woody Harrelson and going through his Oscar nominations, I was like,
yes.
Wasn't he nominated for Green Book? And then I looked it up, and Viggo Mortensen's in that movie.
That's Viggo.
Not Woody Harrelson.
That is
so.
Viggo. Oh, man. Viggo is amazing. He's the best.
So that's pretty much the cast for Triangle of Sadness. There are other people in the movie, but none of them are followed super closely. So we'll get into our likes and dislikes now. One like that I had was, I did think it was interesting how they told the story in 3 distinct chapters.
Okay.
So the first chapter is like this couple and they're at dinner and they're arguing. And then they're like, we should be in a relationship because it'll be good for my social media like clout. And that was the first 30 minutes. And then they get on a boat and that's the second part. And then they get on the island for the third part. I liked the kind of broad overview of what they were trying to do with the story. I didn't like the story at all, but I thought if they had made a better story, that would have been interesting, that they were, you know, in one spot, then another, and it's like 3 distinct chunks for this movie.
Yes.
I did like kind of that as a storytelling mechanic, but I don't think the story was good enough for the, you know, that strategy that they were going with. So
yeah, I did not like the way they split it up because I straight up hated the other 2 parts of the story. I'm surprised I'm saying this. I was interested at the beginning of the film because they show Carl is like trying to make it as this high runway model. And it was fun, too, because they're making fun of like the modeling world. And I think modeling can be a very like a serious career, but they're making fun of things like that make sense, like how some people just look moody and they're brooding and they're upset in every ad campaign. And like, who wants to buy clothes if that's how you're going to look when you're wearing them? So I thought that was funny. I thought the humor was good. I thought that was an interesting dynamic between Carl and Yaya, like when we first meet them and they have that dinner Jared was talking about. That was really interesting. I thought that scene went on much too long, but I was interested in it. Like, by the end of that scene, I already hated both of them. So like my opinion was pretty much established about, I don't like these characters. Like, I don't like who they are is what I'm saying. Like they seemed, you know, pompous and arrogant and just way too wealthy for their own good, whatever. Or manipulative, I should say, because I don't even know that they were wealthy, that Yaya was wealthy, but she was manipulative and could get things paid for her. But I would say like that was the only section I was interested in. And if they would have stayed there, I think that would have been a more interesting story. Once they got, spoilers abound here, people. Once the ship blows up, yeah, everyone, you can rewind it, blows up, the ship blows up, and we still have like an hour and a half left. When the ship blew up and they were on an island, I was like, get me out of here. I cannot watch the rest of this film. I can't take any of this seriously. So There we go.
I had one other scene that I thought was kind of interesting.
Okay.
And that was when they were about to get on the boat, but the staff is already on the boat, and there's all those assistants or whatever that are, you know,
yeah,
helping throughout the week. They're like in this area, and the lead lady is talking to them, and she's like, you know, we got to do our best because we got to make money, and we might make tips at the end of the week. And then they just like start yelling. And I thought that got a chuckle out of me. But then I also liked how they showed like the service staff, like the, you know, the janitors and the maids and things like that,
yeah,
and how they had to witness that just taking place, and they knew that they were not going to get, you know, any additional tips or anything. So I think that was trying to say something there on this movie's trying to say a lot about class status, and but it doesn't do it, I think, in a great way. But I thought that scene was one that maybe did it a little bit better than some others. So
I didn't like that scene, but it's only, you know how we talked about this in Tar, and I think this really could be very much a difference between Western filmmaking, like North America filmmaking, versus European filmmaking. I get what they were trying to do with like classism and rich people. And they're saying rich people suck. I mean, the whole movie is like,
yep,
wealth doesn't give you manners. It doesn't put you at peace. It doesn't bring you really anything except material goods. I agree with that. I just, you know, there wasn't a person to like in this film. There wasn't anybody to root for. But I didn't like that scene because I felt like it was like Tar, and that it was kind of like this humor or something over my head that I didn't understand. And that drove me kind of insane. And I just thought, I don't know what's going on here. This is weird. Get me out of here. And then realized I had 2 hours and 15 minutes left. So, you know, it was all just a bit much for me.
Yeah. Only other like we had, just to kind of pad this out a little bit, is we did like the music. So
yep,
that was a like. Music was good. Yeah.
Yeah. That was actually the only thing I put that I liked, but I'm agreeing with Jared on some of the other points.
I came up with 2 others. Okay. On to dislikes now. A lot of dislikes for this movie. First, we got to talk about, so there is a sequence in this movie. They're on a ship, and basically what happens is, the dinner,
it's like a mega
yacht.
It's like a yacht for millionaires.
Big yacht.
Yeah.
So anyway, this one lady on the yacht is like, I want everybody on the staff to go for a swim. I think you should go for a swim. That'd be so fun. Jump in the ocean. And the chef is like, well, if we do that, we're going to have to push dinner back and all this food's going to be like ruined. So that happens. And then there's also a bunch of like turbulence, the swaying, the ship is swaying.
Yep.
They do that with the camera, which I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting for the first 90 seconds. And then they do it for like 25 minutes. And I was like, well, now I'm dizzy. Thanks a lot. So so that happens as well. And then after dinner and after the seasickness, everybody for about 15, 20 minutes in the movie is throwing up, defecating, rolling around on the floor, throwing up, projectile vomiting. I mean, you see all kinds of different ways to throw up in this sequence. And that's really a big dislike, is that if you want to put a little bit of that in there, I guess, okay. But like, it was so excessive and over the top that I just did not. I get it. I get the point. They're seasick. I don't need that much seeing all that. So
that, like, that alone turned me, I was already not interested in the movie, but that
knocked it down
alone,
so much for me.
I mean, it went from like, this could be a potential 80 to like, wow, I'm barely going to score this movie in a positive manner at all. My problem with that, I also don't consider that potty humor. It's not like when people are sitting on butt plug toys in Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's different. I don't like that humor, but
it's a little more tasteful.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But things like bodily fluids, I'm not an idiot. We all have we've all at some point probably had food poisoning or diarrhea. Like, defecating is a part of life. That is life. But showing it, and also I was shocked they showed it. I was shocked that they showed that. Vomiting, I don't like watching it. I hate doing it, but we see it. We've seen that on film. We've seen that in TV shows and stuff. Showing somebody defecating is like, I don't even know a time I've ever seen that done before. And then it just looked miserable and it was disgusting, which I think they want you to experience that. But I also hated how fake it looked coming out of the toilet, because then the toilet, you guys, the toilet explodes because, you know, toilets randomly explode, not. And all of this poop comes out and it doesn't even look like that. It looks like, I don't want to describe it actually. But it doesn't even look real. And I thought, this was clearly just somebody thought this would be hilarious. And I think it's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. So I don't know. Those are just, that's my thoughts. But I thought, oh, and I also think you can tastefully, if that's the right word, do something like that. You can tell somebody has it coming out both ends. You can do that by sound. You can have a door and hear somebody in the background and hear those sound effects and be like, oh gosh, like what a nightmare. Or, you know, see somebody sitting on a toilet with a trash can in front of them. That's all we need to know. We get it. We understand. And I think it's making the audience, it's dumbing them down. It's saying you're not going to understand it until you see this. And also, you're right, Jared, you mentioned it went on for 15 or 20 minutes. I don't need to see that for 15 or 20 minutes. Disgusting.
Yeah, that was outrageous on how long it went on. We just did not really enjoy that at all. Another dislike in this movie is none of the characters are likable. They all suck. That's kind of the point, is that they're all rich and you're not supposed to like them. But there's no qualities of anybody that are redeemable. But also, you don't get enough backstory on the characters to even like care about them at all. Like, I think we talked about Succession earlier in this episode. None of the characters on Succession are good people. But because you know a decent amount about them, you're interested in them. You're mm-hmm. interested in what they're doing, what their motivations are, even if you can't like root for them per se. But in this movie, you don't learn anything about any of the characters. And so, you know, it's just like the whole time you're watching these people that you know nothing about just throw up on screen and, and you know, do wild stuff.
And that's something I've said before. HBO is exceptionally good at creating very complex, well-rounded, in-depth characters. That you're right. Like Succession, I don't know that I'm rooting for anyone in that show.
No.
But at the same time, I understand why they are the way they are, and I understand what they all want. In this movie, I didn't know anybody. I didn't care about them. If they died, I didn't care. Some people do die. I didn't care. I hated all of them, and I don't feel like I understood any of them, their motivations or otherwise.
Another dislike is this movie is way too long. It's three acts. Like we said, every act is, the first act's not super long. It's maybe a half an hour. The last two acts would be an hour and then an hour basically for the third act. After they got on the island, I was out. I was gone.
I almost just left the couch to be like, Jared, text me what happens because I don't care about
it. I couldn't even really tell you what happened during that part because I wasn't really paying attention. I was doing other stuff. I would turn back every so often to see if something important happened. But I was just kind of like, okay, they're on the island. I got the storyline of that one woman made food and she was like, yeah, I'm going to eat more because I actually worked on all of this and nobody else did anything. And then something with pretzel sticks. And that's what I got from the third act. So,
and Carl cheated, of course. Yep. Like, you can't stay faithful. So, of course, like someone's going to cheat and not think twice about it.
Yeah.
Like, same old, same old.
Yeah, but if this had been 90 minutes, maybe it would get a higher rating for me. I don't know, but it would have been shorter. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Another dislike is there's no resolution to the ending. It's just like ends on a cliffhanger. You don't find out what happened to anybody. You don't know if they got off the island or not. They like at the end of this movie, they see this elevator and they're like, hey, we were at a resort the whole time and we can just go back to, which that made no sense.
And then Carl, who's not even near the elevator, just starts running through the forest and it's done.
Yeah. Yep. And that's the end. There's some music plays and that's the end of the movie. So, oh, forgot to mention the credits, you know, once the credits finally rolled, I was like, hooray, it's over. So the big like was the credits.
This is so small, but like Carl's hair bothered me to no end because I get that that's a style, but it looked so some would call that if anyone's ever put sun in their hair or if anyone's like brown going to blonde, whatever, it looked brassy. To the point where I was like, is this 2001? Like, I truly, that threw me off. I mean that seriously. Like, I really didn't know what time period this was because I was like, no one has that haircut or that color right now. I don't get what's going on here. So that confused me too. And also, he's like an attractive guy, but he looked awful with that hair.
Yeah, that was not a good decision, basically, for that at all. So... another dislike for this movie is like we talked about no resolution, but like what was the point of this movie? Nothing, nothing happens. It's just scenes. And then you think something's going to happen. When the movie starts, you think, oh, this is going to be a movie about the male modeling industry and how that is, you know, way underpaid from female models. They even mentioned that. And, you know, that could be an interesting movie there. You don't know a lot about that. We see a ton about female models, but male models, we don't know as much about. So that could have been an interesting thing for a movie, right? But they don't really do anything with that. And then the second part of the movie, when they get on the ship, I was like, okay, this is going to be like, you know, maybe The Menu or White Lotus or something where they're like, they're all together and something is going to happen here. Basically just the ship blows up and that's all that, because this couple, this older couple make grenades or whatever. And there's one on the ship somehow. And then they like throw it and it blows. I didn't really follow that either. the storytelling though is like just very choppy. There's no, it doesn't get a good flow. There's no way, unless you really, really, really pay attention, to know what's going on. So much of the script is like hidden meaning type stuff that you just have to kind of decipher, which some of that is fine. But like to put so much in there that I've got to like do a bunch of research afterwards to find out what even the point of this was is not good in my book. So,
yeah. Yeah, I hated this movie. I don't really know another way to say it. I absolutely hated it. I felt like... I think the last movie to make me this angry was Blonde. I found this one equally as offensive as Blonde, but Blonde upset me because of actually caring about Marilyn Monroe and just feeling like they depicted her as an idiot, and the accolades it got that I felt it didn't deserve. But this one is similar in that I think it's getting a lot of praise, but it makes no sense. And also if the director or the screenwriter, whoever was behind this idea, if all they wanted was to just say rich people suck, don't they? You could have done that in a 90-minute movie. You didn't need three separate vignettes of like, I don't know, something like a Survivor episode gone wrong. It was just a complete disaster and foul. The whole thing was foul. I absolutely hated it.
Yeah, I did not like it either. I've got two critics' reviews to share with you that I think agree with us. One is Aaron White of the Feelin' Film podcast. I have not listened to your podcast, Aaron, but he agrees with us. He said,
okay,
a painfully blunt satire of the super rich and Instagram celebrity that is rarely entertaining and often annoying.
Yes, absolutely.
And then another one I found was Jim Shrimbry, who said, what starts out as a ripping, hot-blooded social satire skewering wealth, insta-fame, and class snobbery dies almost exactly halfway through. What a pity that something that begins so witty and dry should end up so witless and wet. So,
wow. Like, yes.
That was pretty good. Yeah.
My thoughts exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. This definitely has promise at the beginning when you start watching it. You think maybe this is going to be interesting. Maybe this is going to go in a cool direction, but it does not at all. Another dislike is how the heck does this win the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival?
Good movies
usually win that. Parasite won that. Blue is the Warmest Color. Shoplifters. Things like that. So that's really weird that this won the Palme d'Or.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know enough about the Cannes Film Festival to tell you
either
how they judge it or anything, but If you're telling me this was the best film that came out of that festival, I just have a hard time believing that, unless all the movies just sucked really bad.
I will say the Cannes Film Festival always picks really weird movies for the Palme d'Or.
They do.
Usually ones that aren't like... Now, Parasite's an exception.
Parasite I loved. Oh my gosh.
Very popular.
Crazy about Parasite.
But some of these movies I have not even heard of that have won the Palme d'Or.
Yeah,
they picked the Tree of Life by...
ones.
The Tree of Life by Terrence Malick, which is a very Palme d'Or pick.
It is.
Some other ones. The Pianist won. Pulp Fiction won back in the 90s. So, but you look at the list and a lot of them you don't recognize. So, yeah. Let's see. Any other dislikes before we move on to our scores? Or are we done with Triangle of Sadness? Although the movie title Triangle of Sadness comes from like that area on your face where they mention it right in the beginning of the movie where they're like, can you try not to show your triangle of sadness? And one of the models is auditioning for something. So.
Which I thought that was going to lead to something. And of course,
yeah, me too. I was like, oh, cool. Okay.
What a weird. Okay. I guess we can title
it that. I think my final thing before we move on to our scores is that there's just so much stuff that has done this satire, social commentary type thing better. Like I mentioned too earlier, but The Menu, we both like that. That's a movie about rich people and you know, how they have all this wealth and can go do these exclusive experiences, but they're kind of just idiots. That was, I thought, way funnier and shorter and just a way better story than this was. And then I think of of White Lotus too, which is also doing that same type thing where, you know, everybody's at this hotel, they're all rich, they all have, you know, issues that they're dealing with, and sometimes they're oblivious to, you know, commonplace things. There's always usually one group of people on White Lotus that are like, you know, just above everybody else. They don't really live in the real world. So I think stuff like that, the script writing is better, the acting is better in terms of portraying that on screen. And, you know, obviously like Succession too, which we talked about, that's showcasing a bunch of uber rich people too.
Right.
But doing it in a way that is interesting. So
yeah,
I don't know how this got nominated for best original screenplay. This screenplay is horrible.
I don't think it's going to win anything.
It shouldn't. If it does, so, I'm turning the Oscars off.
Yeah, so. But I don't think it's going to win anything. So, you know.
No, I don't think we have to worry much. No. I mean, we'll see the people on the red carpet. I'm sure Jimmy Kimmel will make a joke about Triangle of Sadness somehow. Yeah. He'll work that into his monologue because that's a interesting title. So I'm sure he'll make a joke about that.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to our scores now. Am I first this week?
I think it's me.
Oh,
yeah,
are you first?
It's me, okay. Because we did the same on All Quiet on the Western Front.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I forgot about that.
Yes. So I'm giving this a 41. I think that is maybe the kindest thing I've ever done. I mentioned Blonde earlier. I gave that a 33. I hated both of them. But 41, I really can't tell you. I can't say with certainty there was anything I just outright thought was great about this film. I found it offensive. I found it disgusting. I found it to be a complete waste of time, and I wouldn't recommend it to a single person. So,
it took me 3 settings to get through this. So
it took me 1 because I thought if I stop it, I'll never go back, and we're recording the podcast about it.
Yeah, going from the 2nd to the 3rd when I had about 40 minutes left, I almost did not finish it. I was like, I really do not want to watch this. I'll go a little higher than you because I had a few more likes, but I'll give it a 52 out of 100.
Okay.
You know, it's not a passing grade at all. You're going to fail the class if you get 52.
For sure.
So, again, not as bad as Blonde. Blonde's still the worst movie that I've seen recently because it's 3 hours long and there's some wild things going on. And black and white, it's very pretentious. But this is up there. This was not good at all. Least favorite of the best picture nominees for sure. I know I didn't love Banshees of Inisherin, but I would watch Banshees of Inisherin.
Oh, see, I did.
Anytime.
I didn't like Tar,
over this
though.
Film. Yeah.
I didn't like Tar, and I said I wouldn't recommend that to anyone, but I would absolutely watch Tar again before watching this ever.
Yeah.
Again.
Yep. I would as well. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's our thoughts on Triangle of Sadness. You can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Search the show on Facebook or find the links in the show description, and also follow us on Letterboxd as well to see what else we are watching. We have one more Best Picture nominee left to review. It is by some guy called Steven Spielberg. I think he's done
new.
A few movies.
Up and coming.
So, yeah, up and coming director Steven Spielberg. This is The Fabelmans with Paul Dano and Michelle. Can I think of
Williams.
Her name?
Well,
yeah,
Williams.
Michelle Williams. Yeah, yep. So, yeah, so they are both in this movie, and it got good reviews. It wasn't super popular when it came out. It kind of came and went, but it did get nominated for Best Picture and a few other awards as well. So, and I always give Steven Spielberg a chance. I mean, the guy's got
a
great track record. So,
and it's a movie about making movies, and that's fun. And
Hollywood loves those.
He does a great job. I don't know that I'm gonna love it, but I hope I'm surprised.
Yeah, I hope it pleasantly surprises me and that I really do enjoy it. So
yes.
That'll be our last Best Picture nominee that we will review. We will also have a review of Creed 3 coming for you as well. And then we'll have our Oscars recap episode on the way too, because the Academy Awards are coming up. So all that is coming up very soon, but our next episode will be The Fabelmans.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.